Hello, friends, and welcome back to episode 6 of Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders. I'm your host, TB, aka Tim Beardsley, and this is the only podcast where we can discuss the Buffalo Bills, the squared circle, and that dusty old shoebox you have hiding out under your bed. Thanks for stopping in. If this is your first time, I encourage you to go back, check out the earlier episodes. If you've rocked with the three T's since the start, thank you so very much. Now, let's not waste any more time. I want to dive right into the world of card collecting. There is a ton going on, so much to talk about, but I need to start by talking about Tops Now. I'm sure by now you have all seen or at least heard about the crazy world that is the Tops Now experience. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Tops Now is essentially what they call a print-on-demand card series. Now, this launched all the way back in 2016. They did it as a trial run, actually, in 2015 with the World Series. It had some success, so they decided to launch it full-time in 2016. Now, the core idea behind the Tops Now product is to release cards that essentially commemorate or celebrate the most exciting and culturally relevant events that are going on at the time. So, for example, a big moment happens, the next day Topps puts out a card that you can then go on their website and order. For example, I've talked about this card before on the podcast, the 2024 Olympic Games Topps Now card. I think it's number 26. This card has LeBron James, Steph Curry, and KD, Kevin Durant, three of the biggest basketball players, obviously, not only in the NBA, but in history. And they put them on the same card. They were all on Team USA for the Olympic Games. And so these three are on the card, and it's a card celebrating Team USA's victory over France in the men's basketball gold medal game at the Paris Olympics. Now, for this card, 588,035 base cards were purchased. So over 500,000 purchased the base card. And they were all chasing. What Topps Now does is they do the base print run, and then they have variations off of this that they include when people order the base card. So if I want one of this triple LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant card, I go on the website, I pay my money, I get sent one. And what Topps does is they include these special parallels or variations and insert it into various random packs. It's supposed to be random packs for free. And so what people were chasing was this one of one, so a single card. It was a triple auto variation of this card that had all three of their autographs on it. Crazy card. Like, this card is going to go for tons of money. And essentially everyone wanted this card because it's probably going to be worth over $1 million, if I'm going to guess. And to this day, that card has not surfaced. Now, as I said, this card is going to go for so much freaking money. It's going to be insane. So this card came out, 588,000 sales of the base card. A month later, that record was then broken when none other than Shohei Ohtani, Los Angeles Dodgers, baseball sensation, he became the first player in MLB history to have a 50-50 season. So what does this mean if you don't follow baseball? He's the first player to ever hit 50 home runs and steal 50 bases in the same season. Huge, historically significant, huge moment in baseball. Crazy stats. A ton of people were going to buy into this hype. So as soon as he hit 50-50, Topps Now puts out a card celebrating this monumentous occasion. 653,737 base cards were sold of that moment. I mean, that's crazy. That's a ton of freaking cards. So I get it. I get the draw for the idea of creating these moments, these huge moments in sports, and putting them on a piece of cardboard. I get it. It's cool because you're buying into a specific moment that makes you feel something, which, if you remember, going back all the way to my first episode, that's why we are invested in these hobbies. That's why we do this stuff, right? It's supposed to get you to feel something. So me personally, I have bought numerous Topps Now cards. I'll be the first to admit it. I have bought in. There's been guys that I collect for my personal collections, and I go back and I buy their Topps Now cards. So there are moments that are just special to you, to the individual person, and you want to capture them. So I have a very, very personal example for you. So last year, July 31st, 2024, I took my son to see the Baltimore Orioles take on the Toronto Blue Jays. And this game was in Baltimore, Camden Yards. Awesome park. One of my favorites, one in my opinion, still one of the greatest parks in Major League Baseball. Now, my son and I, we had been following Jackson Holliday. He was a highly touted prospect. We've been following him very closely since he was drafted, and he was slowly working his way up to the main club. Well, 2024, he debuted with the main club. He was on the team since the beginning of the season, and the season was a disaster for him. I mean, brutal. Like, holy cow, this is a dumpster fire. So he had only managed two hits. He was collecting a ton of strikeouts. He just looked completely lost. It was not good. So the Orioles sent him back down to the minors to kind of regroup, to kind of clear his head, settle him down a little bit. And I had went and bought these tickets well ahead of time, and I didn't know that he was going to be sent down and that he was obviously going to struggle so much. But so I'd gotten these tickets ahead of time, and we were hoping to see him play. And to this point, it wasn't looking good. Now, the game that we were supposed to go to was on a Wednesday. And I think Monday or Tuesday of that same week, so one or two days prior, the Orioles announced Holliday was going to be called back up to start this game. So I know I was super, super excited. I passed this info on to my son. He was excited too. So this is the first game I was going to be able to wear my brand new Jackson Holliday jersey. I was pumped. So my son and I are there in person watching this game. Now, his first two at-bats, he comes up first two times, grounds out both times. I'm like, well, this isn't good. This is just repeating what had been kind of par for the course so far this season. It's just not good. Then all of a sudden, here comes the fifth inning. I look up the scoreboard. I see Holliday is set to come up fifth in the inning. So there's going to be four other batters ahead of him. The inning starts. First batter flies out. So you got one out. Next two guys up, they both walk. So now you have two men on, and there's one guy on deck ahead of Holliday. So in baseball terms, he's technically in the hole. I turn to my son at this point, honest to God. I say, we're going to load the bases, and Holliday's going to hit a slammy. I said, he's going to hit a slammy, and it's going to be the ultimate redemption story. It's going to be awesome. So next batter up, there's two on. Jordan Westberg, he gets plunked. He gets hit by the pitch. Now bases are loaded. So here comes Jackson Holliday. First pitch, he takes it, strike, right down the pipe. Doesn't even bother swing. Strike one. Next pitch, hacks it foul. So here he is. He's down 0-2. Here comes the third pitch. And folks, let me tell you, if there's ever times in your life where you wish you had the ability to like freeze frame, take a picture, take it, just stop everything that's going on around you. As ridiculous as it sounds, this would have been one of those moments. Jackson Holliday connects with this third pitch, and he absolutely destroys this baseball. The sound, when you hear that ball come off the bat, the sound is glorious. It's glorious. And this ball is sent into orbit and lands on freaking Utah Street over the right field seats. Now, at this point, my son and I are jumping up and down, going absolutely crazy, screaming like schoolgirls. I am absolutely not ashamed to say it. It was a magical moment. Not only does he crush this grand slam, but this is also his very first major league home run. So needless to say, this is a super, super cool moment. Now, if you're familiar with Camden Yards, anytime a player hits a home run onto Utah Street, the Orioles place a ball marker on the brick walkway out there where people can walk. It's like a concourse. They place a ball marker on the walkway where the home run lands. It's really cool to just walk around and see where all the home runs have landed. They mark it with feet and who hit it, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, after the game, my son and I go out to Utah Street, and they had marked with paint the exact spot where Holliday's grand slam had landed on Utah Street. So it's super cool. So my son and I, we kind of kneel down. Somebody takes a picture of us in front of this marker. And let me tell you, as a dad, it doesn't get much cooler than this. Like, to me, this is the perfect, perfect application of what a Topps Now card should be. I knew instantly after he hit that grand slam that I would be on the website, the Topps website, the next day, checking to see if this moment was going to be stamped onto a piece of cardboard, and I would be ordering the card regardless of the cost because of what that game and that moment meant to me. Now, would it mean something to someone who roots for the Angels or the Mariners across the country? No, probably not. But for that moment, that one experience, me and my son, that was all that mattered, and this was an absolute no-brainer. So I ordered it. Weeks go by. It finally gets to my house. I look at it, and the card's awesome. It's just awesome. I love the card. It's one card that I actually sent off to get graded, and this was the first batch of cards I had ever sent off to get graded because I wanted to kind of, not because this card had a huge dollar amount, but because it has so much meaning for me and that moment meant so much for me personally. So it's probably one of my favorite cards I own, and it's really not even close. So as far as these special specific Topps Now sports moments, I totally get it. But then there's the other side of the coin. There are also non-sports top cards and non-sports Topps Now cards. And there are print runs for pretty much everything you can imagine. I mean, so they cover all the sports, which we kind of already talked about. I mean, literally all the sports. WWE, random soccer stuff, baseball. Okay, I guess they don't cover all sports because they don't own the license to football, so there's no football stuff. Some college stuff. I mean, there's even now women's softball stuff on there. It's crazy. But for the non-sports, they have Disney cards. They have Marvel cards. They have Garbage Pail Kid cards. They have Star Wars cards, which are hugely popular. And of course, recently, they even just came out with a Topps Now card for the newly elected Pope. So good old Pope Leo is rocking his recently elected, I don't know, Popedom, whatever the heck you call it. And this card crushed it. So for a non-sport, this card sold 133,533 copies, which had bested previous non-sport cards, such as, I just looked this up, the cards that it outsold were 2020's Dr. Fauci's card. So they made a COVID doctor card, which is crazy weird. That card sold around 50,000 copies. And then a 2024 solar eclipse card. Now, I'd much rather have the solar eclipse card than a Dr. Fauci card, but hey, who am I to judge? So this is crazy stuff. But the one Topps Now card that really threw me off and kind of sent me down this whole path in the first place is the one that came out about a week ago, and it came out during Fanatics Fest while it was going on. And this is the KD card, the Kevin Durant card. Have you all seen this? Because if you have not seen this, KD is at Fanatics Fest taking part. He's being interviewed. He's up on some sort of panel, and he, during the middle of the interview, he is notified live that he has actually been traded to Houston. So Kevin Durant, he's being asked questions, and suddenly it's brought up that he has in fact been traded to Houston. So what does Topps decide to do? They decide to create a Topps Now card of this very moment. Now, is this a viral moment? I mean, I'm not one to judge, but the guy is literally sitting in a chair on a stage in street clothes. He's looking at the camera very oddly, and he looks like he's not very happy. So what are we doing, Topps? Why are we choosing to capture this moment? Because it seems a little weird to me. And I'm trying to think, like, have we gone too far? Because I'm not sure anymore. Who is buying this weird looking street clothes wearing Kevin Durant card where he's literally just been told he's been traded to Houston? I don't know. I can't wait to see what the actual print run is on this card, but I hope this one kind of flops because it's kind of ridiculous. I just think it's a little weird, and I think maybe we should have left this one alone, but it probably won't, because crazy basketball cards seem to sell really well. So I'm thinking, if it doesn't flop, what does this look like in the future? Does this open the door for more moments like this? So the whole craziness got me thinking of what I'd want to see on these Topps Now cards if I was in fact making them. If I was in charge and I could actually put together a list, what crazy moments would I want to see etched on cardboard forever? So for this episode of the 3T's podcast, we are about to bust out the Crossing the T's segment of the week. Now, I have drawn up a list of my top five historic Bills moments that I want captured on a trading card, courtesy of our boys over at Topps Now. So here we go. Y'all ready? Top five list, historic Bills moments that we should capture in Topps Now form. Number one, Ryan Fitzpatrick shirtless. If y'all don't know what I'm talking about, Ryan Fitzpatrick, former Bills quarterback, fan favorite, everyone knows who he is. This is not from a particular game he played, but rather this is his iconic shirtless pose in the frigid temps of Orchard Park on January 22nd, 2022, during the playoff annihilation of the New England Patriots 47-17. Some call this the absolute perfect game. offensively, of course, and some think Fitzmagic is a absolute national treasure. So combine the two, perfect game, Fitzmagic, shirtless, it all makes sense. Number one, boom, there you go. Who's buying that card? I think I would. I would actually buy this card. In fact, I think I would buy all these cards. Let's move on. Number two, T.O., Terrell Owens. He is handed the keys to the city. Do you all remember this moment of insanity? T.O. had just signed with the Bills. It was crazy around Western New York. If you remember this time, T.O. had just signed a one-year deal, and there was a ton of hoopla and craziness following him around. If you remember, he had a reality show on VH1. The camera crew was following him everywhere. It was just madness. Anyway, he signs with the Bills, a one-year deal. He flies into Buffalo, and within 24 hours, the mayor is literally giving him a key to the city. Think about that for a second. The key to the city for T.O.? The guy hasn't played a single snap for the Bills yet, but here he is getting a key to the city. So what does he do to thank the mayor and the city of Buffalo? He goes on and catches how many balls that year? 55 catches, and he amassed 829 yards that season, all in exchange for a key to the city. So 55 catches, 829. I'm not too sure if that was worth it, but he got the key to the city. Yikes. So there you go, number two. Number three. On the top five list of historic Bills moments I want to capture in card form, Stevie Johnson blames God card. Now, if you remember this fiasco, this took place in November of 2010. The Bills were bad. I mean, they started the season 0-8. That's how bad they were. It was atrocious. So we rattle off a couple wins. I believe they won two straight. And then they're playing the Steelers, good old Big Ben Roethlisberger. So the Bills were down. They managed to come back. This game goes into overtime. Who's QB? Good old Fitzmagic. He throws a beautiful pass to Stevie Johnson, who is literally wide open in the end zone. I mean, wide open. And in absolute pure Bills fashion, what does Stevie do? He drops the ball. So we could have won three games in a row. But he drops it, we go on, and we lose the game. To make matters worse, after this crazy dropped pass, after the game, Stevie goes on his Twitter account and blames the Lord Almighty, the man upstairs, for him dropping the pass. He says something to the effect of, "I praise you 24/7, and this how you do me?" And that's what I want to see dropped right on top of this card. You can have him sign it. I don't care what happens. I want this card. I want to put it in my Bills collection. It would be glorious. So Tops, if you're listening, get on that. Do a retro Tops Now card. I want the Stevie Johnson blames God card. Put that in the mailbox. Let's move on to number four. Now, some of y'all might get mad at me for this one, but I am bringing in card form Nate Peterman's first career start. What a moment this one is. Can this be classified as the worst first start in the history of sports? I think if you look at it, it quite possibly could be. So flashback, folks. Let's go, Mafia. Let's jump in the DeLorean back to 2017. The Bills had started the season 5-4. Not bad, Tyrod Taylor's QB, but that wasn't good enough. So what does good old Sean McDermott do? He decides he's going to bench Tyrod Taylor, and he's going to start Nate Peterman on the road against the LA Chargers. Do you all remember this game? Because it was an absolute dumpster fire. So here comes the rookie in an away game, and then he proceeds to drop the biggest turd you will ever see. Five pickles. That's right, folks. Five interceptions in the first freaking half of the game. Five picks in the first half of the game. Needless to say, halftime comes around and he gets benched. Of course, the Bills go on to lose the game 54-24. And after the game, good old Sean says, "I'm going to take my time and evaluate it. I felt like this was the right situation for Nate to come in and play." He also goes on to say, "I don't regret my decision. I regret the result. We didn't get the result we were looking for, so I don't regret the decision at all." I know that's a lot of writing, but I would love to compress that quote and put it on the back of this Tops Now card, because I want him to be able to go and look at this card anytime he thinks of doing something as stupid as starting Nate Peterman, because that game was atrocious and it needs to be encapsulated in card form. And number five, last but certainly not least, back in the DeLorean, driving all the way back to September 16th, 2018, another Chargers game. That's right, but this time the score is only 28-6 at the half. We are down, we're losing, and then it gets even worse because then something I had never thought I would ever see in my lifetime absolutely happens. If you all remember this, against the Chargers, September 16th, 2018, starting cornerback, Vontae Davis, he goes to the coaching staff and he literally tells them he's done. He's not done with the series or the game. He's done with the team, with the sport, with everything. He literally quits in the middle of a National Football League game. Can you believe that? I want this in card form. I want it forever etched. I want to protect it and put it in a binder and look at that card forever, because what a disaster that moment was. So there you go. Those are the five moments that I want turned into Topps Now cards. Awesome top five Bills moments. I think they would absolutely be best sellers. So what else is happening in the card world? Well, Fanatics Fest wrapped up over last weekend, and for the most part, it seemed to have received rave reviews. I mean, everybody was talking about it. There were a ton of people there. Tickets were sold out. I mean, it was everywhere. If you were on social media over Fanatics Fest weekend, you saw clip after clip, video after video of celebrities, sports stars all coming together. They were all over the place during the show. You had so many people taking so many media clips and doing their thing. It was crazy. But I got to be honest, folks. I don't think we saw enough of my favorite athlete of all time. That's right. The fake TB, Tom Brady, because he only literally accounted for 80 to 90% of the freaking content I saw. It's absolutely ridiculous. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Every time I opened my phone, every time I opened Twitter or look at Instagram, it was Tom Brady. He's walking around with his goon squad. He's talking on panels. He's throwing baseballs. He's throwing footballs. He's shooting three-pointers. Blah, 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 blah. He's hitting hockey pucks. I'm like, he's wearing this pair of glasses and this pair of glasses. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Why is there so much freaking Tom Brady at this damn show? But then the absolute worst thing happened. Have you seen this video, folks, where he is doing the WWE entrance? It is sick. It's sick. If you don't know, Fanatics Fest set up a literal WWE ramp. Really cool. And all the fans can participate and they can pick their entrance music and they come out of the curtain and they stand at the top of the ramp and they can do whatever they want. It's pretty sweet. So, of course, because he's everywhere, Tom Brady has to have his own WWE entrance. So the fake TB comes out to none other than the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes' music, which he's not my favorite, but his song is a banger. That's pure fire. Like, he's got one of the best songs in the company. So out comes Tom Brady to Cody Rhodes' song. He's at the top of the ramp. He's wearing a championship belt. It's thrown, it's kind of thrown over his shoulder. The first thing he does is he sticks his arms out. The belt then proceeds to slide off his shoulder. Instead of picking it up, he just leaves it there. So he just doesn't bother to pick it up, which is very disrespectful to the belt. He just leaves it there. Then he proceeds to walk, being the awesome human being he is. He then, and I know this is all plant, but just keep following me. He then grabs a Jets jersey from someone who's standing in the crowd. Again, I know it's a plant. He throws the Jets jersey on the ground. And one of the least favorite things I ever like to see, he actually spits on the jersey. And you can see him essentially hawk a loogie and spit on this jersey. One of the reasons why I can't stand Goldberg so much is because he spits all over the freaking ring when he's wrestling. But here's a good old Tom Brady, and he's throwing the Jets jersey on the ground, spits on it. Then he keeps walking. Then he grabs a Giant jersey. So a there you go, Bills fans. New Jersey Giants, New York Giants jersey, and rips it in half. He literally rips it in half, which I know he's not that strong. So come on, it must have been like cut. So easy tear away Giants jersey. Anyway, he rips it in half. And then who comes to save the day but Eli Manning? Eli Manning runs out from back behind the curtain. He jumps on Brady's back and he saves the day. And so look, I know the whole thing was staged, but give me a break. Get this freaking guy off my screen. I get it. He's there. I tried a couple episodes ago to, if money were no object, by the week, to go have Tom Brady inscribe to the real TB on some Bills merch, but he's too cool to sign anything for anyone at Fanatics Fest, but he just has to go around and do all this other stupid crap, and he won't ever get off your screen. So it's too much. It's too much boo-boo. I can't take this guy anymore. I just wish he would go away. Anyway, I think that'll about cover the top loader portion of the program. So, Wrestling Marks, how are we feeling today? Lots to go over, lots to discuss in the world of professional wrestling. But I want to start with the Cena Punk story that's been kind of evolving over the last few shows between Raw, SmackDown, and then finally Night of Champions. So we finally started to get somewhere with the promos between these two. If you remember Monday Night Raw, Cena and R-Truth had their second match. It was kind of a rematch. During this match, Cena ends up grabbing his belt, smashing Truth over the head with it, and he gets himself DQ'd, surprise, surprise. And then out comes Punk to essentially save the day. They get into a little scuffle. Cena then proceeds to drop him using a table spot that's sponsored by none other than Slim Jim. Side note, this is total garbage. He pulls the table out. He sets the table up. And you can see clearly on each end of the table is a sticker that says Slim Jim. While I was not surprised, it was kind of ridiculous. But here we go. So now we're doing sponsored table spots that are brought to you by Slim Jim. So anyway, Cena puts Punk through the table. Punk is then laying there essentially unconscious for about 10 minutes as Cena, which is crazy to me, but in professional wrestling, you have to suspend disbelief. So sure, CM Punk, one table shot. He's going to lay there while Cena spins this tune on him for about 10 minutes. So Cena then drops a crazy promo, which is clearly a throwback to Punk's pipe bomb from their feud that was about 14 years ago. It was an awesome promo. I gotta tell you, some people didn't like it. They said he was copying him too much and a lot of it didn't hit its mark. You know what? We got to take our victories with this Cena fiasco anywhere we can get them. And to me, I thought this was a great step forward. I thought he was progressing his character and it really added to the Punk story. So to me, it was a win. It was nice to see a promo of this. It was nice to see a promo that he cut actually matter, because up to this point, all he'd been doing is just ripping on the fans. So I thought it was great. And then fast forward to SmackDown. And out comes CM Punk to the ring, and he looks just like old school John Cena, aka Doctor of Thugonomics. He's got his jersey on, he's got a sideways hat going, and he comes out and basically battle raps his way to cut a promo on Cena, which was also very good. I don't think it was as good as Cena's, but hey, Punk did what he did. Tip of the cap to him. So now we are set for the main event of Night of Champions, which, of course, was from none other than Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Having just reviewed Goldberg's last 9 years of wrestling, I feel like I literally can't escape this freaking place, but here we are. Quick side note, I'm watching Night of Champions, and I don't know why I had never put this together, or maybe I never heard it before, but I stopped myself, and I was like, did they say what they just said? I had no idea that the Royal Rumble was going to be in Saudi Arabia next year. The actual Royal freaking Rumble is going to be in Saudi Arabia for the first time ever. What are we doing? WWE, what are we doing? The Royal Rumble is one of the top 3 to 4 pay-per-views of the entire year, and now we're selling it off to Saudi Arabia? Like, give me a break. It's one thing if we're giving them Night of Champions and some of these second-rate shows. You want to go have a week with Raw and SmackDown, NXT, great. I don't care. Do what you want. But to have the actual Royal Rumble, in my opinion, top 3 event on the entire WWE calendar, what the hell are we doing? It was so frustrating to hear. Apparently, this has been announced months ago and I must have missed it. But anyway, I digress. Back to the match. The match is actually pretty good as far as the Cena matches go on this sort of bad guy title run. It's probably the best match that Cena has had so far, because the others were kind of crap. Anyway, everything goes crazy, of course, at the end. There's a big schmazola. Rollins, Seth Rollins, and his goon squad and his, you know, legal team, Bronson and Braun, come down. They start attacking everybody. And then Penta's music hits. Now, this is where things get really weird, because if you watch this pay-per-view, Penta starts to run down the ramp, but then he gets about 5 feet. He stops. Then he starts doing his slow walk and strut and doing all these poses. And I'm watching him and I'm like, Penta, what are you doing? Get your ass to the ring and stop posing. You look ridiculous. If you're going to do a save, if you're going to do a run-in and save somebody, you need to actually run in. You can't be stopping and waving to the fans and doing your whatever the hell stupid pose walk nonsense he's doing. Anyway, he finally gets down to the ring. Then Sami Zayn comes out. It's chaos. There's people everywhere. But here is the absolute best spot of the night, because if you haven't seen this yet in short video form or meme form, referee Charles Robinson gets the award for best spot of the night. So Seth Rollins is in the ring. He's your Money in the Bank winner, obviously, and he's attempting to cash in. He's calling for a ref. So here comes none other than good old Charles Robinson. He's running full steam down the ramp. Full steam. And the camera is zoomed in close, so you see him run. And then out of nowhere, he gets taken out by a flying shoulder tackle by John Cena. And Charles Robinson goes flying across the floor mats. It is by far the highlight of the entire night. Great. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Anyway, match continues. Seth Rollins then hits Punk with the curb stomp. John Cena gets in the ring, and it's 1-2-3. Punk loses. Cena retains. Total, like I said, total schmoz fest. Too much going on. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. And there is a lot of crap that happened in that match. Whatever. It is what it is. So the rest of the show, quick breakdown. Men's King of the Ring final. You had Cody versus Randy Orton. And surprise, surprise, Cody wins. No, is anyone shocked by Cody winning? Anyone? No one? So the match was okay. They're just trading finishers back and forth at the end. It was kind of stupid. Everyone just keeps kicking out left and right. And then at the end, Randy's like slowly, menacingly walking back up the ramp. He keeps turning around, looking back at Cody as Cody's in the ring doing his good guy thing and showering Randy with all these praises. It was kind of stupid. And of course, now we're setting up for John Cena versus Cody Rhodes again at SummerSlam. Like, we literally just did this, but yet here we go again. I don't know, folks. I don't want to see John Cena, Cody Rhodes number two. Maybe something else happens, but I seriously doubt it. Another match, Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez. This was a decent match, but she never wins. Raquel literally never wins. I know she is one half of the women's tag champions. I don't know what they're going to do with that now that Liv's out, but one-on-one matches, one-on-one prominent, important matches, Raquel never wins. The women's Queen of the Ring final. Now, this match was not so great. Jade Cargill versus Asuka. And look, I don't know what was going on. Maybe they were having a bad day, but this match was not great, Bob. She's just not, I don't know. She looks good until she gets to the ring, and then she, I don't know. It's just something's slightly off with the way she wrestles. I don't know. There's problems there. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe she'll get better. Hope so, because she's strong as hell. I think she can be good. Love how she kind of takes the Marvel character Storm and, you know, does some different outfit stuff with that. Like I said, the look is there. It's just once the bell rings, something's off, something's missing. Anyway, she wins the match. She's your queen in the ring, and the crowd doesn't care. They did not want her to win. They give zero reaction. The crowd literally could care less. Then which brings me to Karrion Kross versus Sami Zayn. The online wrestling community, there's been an underground movement, an underground push to get Karrion Kross a more prominent position in the company. And he finally gets a match with Sami Zayn. It's in Saudi, and he loses. And again, it's like, what are we doing? Because now we go, he finally started to get what looks like a little bit of momentum, and now all of a sudden, it's just back to zero. So it's like, why are we doing this? I get it. Sami's huge over there, and the match was fine. Kross loses, and now it's like, he's back to zero. So I don't know. I don't know what to do. Fatu versus Solo Sikoa. Again, we have another schmoz fest. This one kind of went really crazy, and I think Michael Cole didn't even know what the hell was going on. So Tonga returns. He'd been hurt for a while. So he comes out, makes the save. He starts attacking Fatu. That doesn't work. And then here comes another guy in the family. And now, like I said before, we're probably on like the 30th member of the bloodline. So here comes this huge dude that they are claiming is 7 feet tall. And I can only describe him as a love child between X-Pac and Kevin Nash, because he's huge and tall and he has long hair like Kevin Nash, but his face, he's got facial features that look just like X-Pac. So this is the love child of X-Pac and Kevin Nash. It is what it is. And then there's Michael Cole, who's doing the announcing, and he has no clue what he's saying. He literally says, "That's Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, their brother." And we're like, "What are you talking about? That's neither one of those people." He has no idea what he's saying. He doesn't correct himself ever. They never say who this person is, but he just goes on and say, and he's assuming we know who the hell this person is. Anyway, big schmoz fest. Fatu loses the belt. Solo has the United States Championship. He has a new gang. And where do we go from here? Well, it's pretty easy. If I'm a betting man, I'm betting that we're going to have another bloodline versus bloodline story. We're going to have the Usos and Fatu against Solo and his boys. So pretty easy setup. And there you have it. All in all, I don't know. The whole thing, the whole Night of Champions, it was fine. If you told me, hey, you got to rate it on a scale of 5 turnbuckles or 4 turnbuckles, whatever the heck rating system we want to use, I would say it's like right in the middle. It was fine. It's nothing to write home about. I will never go back and watch any of these matches unless I'm doing research on something, because it really wasn't that good. But I don't know. It was fine. Anyway, AEW, what do I want to say about AEW? Well, they had some shows. I don't know what to say at this point. They had some shows. Sometimes watching AEW feels like a chore. I don't know why. Their top guys are amazing. Their top women are amazing. But there's really just not a lot to talk about. I need All In to get here ASAP, because some of these TV tapings are just not doing it for me. And listen, AEW, you can't keep changing the night that your shows are on every single week. There has to be some continuity. It can't be this week it's Wednesday, then it's Saturday, or then it's Friday, and then it's Thursday, and then Wednesday show is 2 hours, and now it's 4 hours, and then it's 2 hours, and now it's like, holy cow, people, take it easy. Pick a night, pick a length of time, and stick with it. You're never going to grow and actually try to compete with the other guys if you keep doing this garbage. It's just, it's fine. It's whatever. The shows, I try to stay up with it. There's some really good segments, but the rest, it's just meh. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, folks. That's just me. Anyway, let's move on. Bills Mafia, how are we feeling? This is definitely the slow period for the NFL and for teams. We have a bit of a break until we wait patiently for training camp to arrive. The Bills came out last week and announced their training camp schedule, which will be held at St. John Fisher once again. And this time, HBO is bringing the crew for Hard Knocks. I don't know how you all feel about this. I don't really know how I feel about this. Apparently, Hard Knocks crew is only going to be taping during training camp, and then they are moving on to the NFC East. So you're going to get, I looked this up today, you're going to get 5 training camp episodes on the Bills, and then they can go focus on whoever. Dak Prescott, hooray, no one cares. But I'm kind of glad that it's only for training camp, because I don't want the attention. Is that weird? Is that weird to say? I don't want the attention. So come in for training camp. We'll talk about the James Cook scenario. We'll talk about, I don't know, who are they even going to focus on? We're gonna play Mr. Brightside for 5 episodes for 60 minutes, and everyone's going to dance and find out what a great guy Josh Allen is, and it's going to be great. And Mitch Trubisky, maybe we'll do a special on Mitch Trubisky, and it'll be awesome. Maybe they'll try to recreate the Matt Milano, Mike White on-field incident in which he literally folded him in a suitcase. Maybe we can do that. But all in all, I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm kind of glad it's only going to be for training camp. But you never know. I'm just afraid. I don't want them to try to force and try to create some drama, manufacture some kind of BS drama. I don't know. You never know what you're looking at when you watch this stuff. You never know what's real. You never know what's legit and what is actually being produced for TV. So I kind of don't want them. I'm going to watch it, of course, but I'm a bit apprehensive if I'm being honest. And finally, I looked this up the other day. The Bills are the only team in the NFL favored to win every single game this year on the schedule. And this is crazy to me because if you look at the schedule, if you break down the schedule, there are a handful of really difficult games on the schedule. So obviously the home opener against Baltimore, that's, in my opinion, if you look at the schedule, that's the toughest game of the year. Then we play the Chiefs, we play the Eagles, we play the Bengals, we play the Bucks. Thank God most of these games are at home. So there's really not one really difficult road game. If you break down the schedule, so Ravens, Chiefs, Eagles, Bengals, Bucks, those are the five toughest games by far. And we're favored in every one of those games. Now, I looked this up. Now, since 1978, only 23 teams have gone on to be favored in every game of a regular season. 23 teams. In how many years is that? A lot. 47 years. That's crazy. Now, the other side, the flip side of the coin, 28 teams have been underdogs in every game of a regular season during the same time span. You're more than likely to be the underdog in every game than you are to be favored in every game. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Should I be worried? What would I rather be as a team? Favored in every game or the underdog in every game? I don't know. I guess I should just go bet the house that the Bills run the freaking table. We go 20-0, and this is the year we finally bring the Lombardi Trophy to Western New York. What do you think, folks? 20-0? Who's signing up for that? I can't wait. Sounds about right to me. I think that's going to do it for episode 6 of Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders. I cannot thank you enough for stopping in. If you have enjoyed this episode or any episode of the 3T's podcast, please, please, please do me a favor. Share it with someone you know, whether they are a fellow card collector, someone who loves professional wrestling, or of course, a fellow member of the mafia. It doesn't matter. I want to grow this thing one episode at a time. So please, please help a brother out. Hit that follow button. Throw a review up. Help me out. Leave a quick review. Let's build this thing together one episode at a time. And as always, I appreciate you all very, very much. So until next time, whether it's ripping packs, breaking tables, or dropping elbows, keep doing what you love. And as always, go Bills!